Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Thanks for joining us on Special Edition. I'm Paula Dagnan. If you or someone you know has been looking for a job, then you need to stick around and hear what Carrie Miscavige has to tell you about an upcoming virtual job fair. Carrie, we have been through quite a long time, months of people's lives changing and so many different things are happening. And now you're doing something with your group that is a little bit different because so many people are affected by a job loss. What's coming up?
Absolutely, Paula, and thank you for having me today. We are hosting our very first virtual career fair. You know, the Times Leader is very traditional in hosting real career fairs live in person for over 20 years. And because of COVID and the difficult year that we've had, we obviously didn't feel safe or comfortable holding a big career fair like we usually do. So we needed to change and figure out a way that we could still help our local employers get new job seekers, because it's a problem right now that our local businesses need help. They need new employees, and they are reaching out in any number of ways to try to get new job seekers. So we created our very first virtual career fair, and we're very excited about that.
What made you decide to try the virtual route? Because again, you know, schools, businesses, probably in your own building, you are so virtual. But this is a little bit different because it's a little bit more personal. So how were you able to make the transition?
Well, it's a very exciting platform that we're working with, and the technology is all there. So we're able to actually connect a job seeker with an employer via video chat, phone chat, however you would do a normal interview, except it's all virtually through technology. And you only need your phone. You could do it from your phone device. You can do it from a laptop. You can do it from your desktop if you're in an office setting. So it's easy to do no matter what kind of device that you have.
All right. Carrie, I'm a little confused now because, again, there are a lot of people out there who are not technologically aloof, let's put it that way.
Right.
So, all right, and when is this coming up? It's the 21st, correct?
Correct. We are hosting the virtual career fair Wednesday, October 21st from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Okay, so now I've heard Carrie Miscavige talk about this upcoming virtual job fair, and I'm interested. So now it's Wednesday morning, the 21st of October. It's 9 a.m. What do I do?
Well, if you've seen some of our marketing materials, and of course, we've been out everywhere, we're encouraging our job seekers to go to our website to register early, because that makes the most sense. you can go to our virtual career fair website. And to register, it's very simple, timesleader.com/register. All the information is right there sitting on that landing page. It gives you all the directions of what to do. But you want to go on the career fair site early because there are 31 employers listed in that fair that have interview times just waiting for you to go on and log on and set up those times for yourself. So you could set your whole day ahead of time for next Wednesday because there are so many jobs on there available that you can go on, log in, and set the interviews for yourself and plan your whole day. And that gives you just a better opportunity to find your next job.
Wow, 31?
There are 31 currently, and we are still adding every day because, as I said, we have a little bit of an issue in northeastern Pennsylvania where our local businesses need job seekers, and we're trying to do everything we can to help them get the help that they need.
Along the lines of the 31, and again, I'm logging on Wednesday morning and maybe I forgot because sometimes we do that. So I didn't get a chance to really look through everybody that was there.
Sure.
So what if
sure.
I do wait until Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock and decide, oh, that's right, I forgot about that.
That's right. And you can still join in. There will still be interview times available, but maybe some of the best times are taken already. So you just have to look through and see what times are still available. And you can certainly schedule an interview with one of the employers. That's not a problem at all.
Now, what happens if someone, because when you're in an interview, you usually bring along your resume. What happens if something like that is requested?
When you go into the career fair and log in, you have the opportunity right there to upload your resume. So your resume can be viewed by the employer ahead of time, just to make it easy, just like a regular interview with a regular company, you know, outside of COVID.
Wow. So you've really, who put all this together?
Well, it's part of my job to, make sure we're bringing as many opportunities as we can to our local employers and businesses. So it's been a process, and it's been such a great one, and we're excited to be able to offer this new option. And honestly, I think this is how we're going to do it moving forward. It makes the most sense.
Well, it certainly is very convenient. And when we go back and talk about the employers that are involved, maybe not necessarily with names, but what kind of companies, what kind of businesses are making up the ones that you have that are continuing to add on a daily basis?
Sure. Well, they're across the full spectrum. We have nursing and medical jobs, a lot of those opportunities. We have a lot in manufacturing and technology, a lot of those. And some of those we want to pay particular attention to because some of them are paying in excess of $25 per hour. So you definitely want to log on and check out the employers that are there because some of the job opportunities are good. And honestly, now is the time if you're looking for a job to do so because there's a lot of different opportunities. And if we wait too long, end of the year, next year, those opportunities become a lot more competitive. So my thought is if you need a job, start looking now and get involved in this career fair because you could set yourself up for next year. Support your community, support your family. It's the right time to do so.
With the, again, you mentioned earlier about the whole idea that so many businesses took a downturn because of COVID. Did a lot of businesses come to you and ask, are you going to do a job fair this year because of the fact that they really do need workers?
Absolutely. We heard from so many local employers that said, hey, you know, normally we participate in your live career fair. What can we do this year to make sure we fill our positions? Because we do count on the Times Leader in their job fair to help us do so. So what can we do this year? And by that point, we had a plan already laid out. And we said, don't worry, we're on board and we will help you fill those positions.
A lot of the positions too, full-time?
A lot of them are full-time, absolutely.
So that means that you're not just looking for part-time, but people who may want even a career change might be worth looking into it.
Absolutely. You know, over the past 6-7 months, people have been furloughed or laid off, and it's time to look for that new career or a change in scenery. And so this career fair will certainly offer that opportunity as well.
Wow. It really sounds like quite an undertaking and something that is going to be quite trend-setting, I think. They'll be looking to you for their guidance in the future for a lot of different things. So, Carrie, once again, give our listeners the where, the when, the how, and make your pitch. Tell them. They'd be silly to miss it.
All right. Well, if you're looking for a job or career change in northeastern Pennsylvania, you want to go to timesleader.com/register. Get yourself logged in to our platform. Look at all of the employers that are there and the job that they're offering, and schedule the interviews. You want to do this between now and next Wednesday. If you wait till next Wednesday, you could still get involved, but those time slots will be hopefully mostly filled up, but there still will be some time available. And that all takes place next Wednesday, October 21st, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Great. And maybe we'll have to have you come back, not maybe, definitely, and let us know how it all makes out.
Absolutely. We're very excited about this program. And, you know, there's a learning curve for all of us because it's our first virtual fair, but it's been very smooth sailing, and we're very excited about the success of the event.
I'd be very interested to hear what some of the participants think about it after it's all over.
Absolutely. Well, you know, with a live career fair, they have to carry their table, their backdrop, and so many things with them to set up. And for this virtual fair, they can interview from the comfort of their own office. So there's a ton of advantages to it.
Yeah, their feet are up on the desk.
They could be, absolutely.
And yours are just right now. Carrie, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Paula.
Now joining us, John Ochakevich. He's the director of CASA of Luzerne County. He has an update of what they've been doing since last we talked to him back in February. For those who might not know what CASA is, what it means, what it does, can you give us a brief overview of CASA of Luzerne County?
Certainly. Let's start first with the acronym CASA, which stands for Court Appointed Special Advocate. We are a child advocacy nonprofit organization that serves children in Luzerne County who have suffered abuse or neglect, sometimes both, many of whom are in foster care placement. And currently there are about 500 Luzerne County children in foster care placement. We are regarded as an independent arm or resource of the court, appointed by the court to one child or one sibling group. Our role is to, as a program, to recruit, to train, and provide support and supervision to volunteers from our community who then become advocates appointed by the court to these children with the intention of assisting the court in having much more information about this child than the judge would otherwise have, because as I've mentioned, the advocate is appointed to one case, one child, one sibling group, with the intention of providing the judge with information so that the judge can make an informed decision whether it's about placement and or services, with the intention of trying to facilitate a return home or a more permanent option, which can sometimes be adoption or with a permanent guardian. But the point is, the goal is for this child to achieve a safe, permanent, nurturing home just as soon as possible.
When someone is thinking about becoming an advocate for CASA, what kind of a background do they need?
Well, there isn't necessarily a legal background. The three prerequisites are that you be at least 21 years of age, a high school education, and obviously complete all the necessary background without any issues in your past in terms of the clearances. And then we provide the training utilizing a curriculum designed by the National CASA Organization in Seattle, Washington. What we are seeking in a volunteer is someone who has a passion. passion to want to make a difference in a child's life, because the level of commitment is so, so important. The advocate, as I mentioned, our sibling group, and the expectation is that advocate is going to be spending 10, 12, 15 hours per month, each and every month that that child is in placement and the case is held open by the court, which could be 1, 2, we've had some cases, 3 years. So life experiences are certainly important. The ability to communicate and work with others, because our advocates encounter not only children, but foster parents and birth parents and social workers and therapists and teachers and judges and lawyers. So it's that ability to be able to communicate both in writing, because we submit a report to the court each time the court schedules a hearing, and our advocates testify. So it's a combination of being able to collaborate and work with others. It's the ability to communicate, but most importantly, it's that passion to want to help a child at a time in this child's life when he or she is at the most vulnerable, manic experience, and really need one adult who is going to be consistent and committed and compassionate and caring to be that voice for the child in the courtroom and the eyes and the ears for the judge outside of the courtroom.
What has COVID and the whole change of way that things are happening, because everything that you had done before, you were in a courtroom, and now that has changed. So how has CASA and the advocates have to adapt in order to make all this work, since it's still ongoing?
Well, the first unfortunate impact of COVID, we were scheduled to have a fall training class with 12 new advocates beginning on March 25th, and shortly before that is when the lockdown occurred because of COVID, and we had to cancel that spring training. So that was a huge disappointment. Thankfully, we were able to start a new training class in September. It's being done virtually. We have 8 advocates that are currently being trained and will complete their training next month. So it's good that we've made that adjustment. We've gone from in-person training to doing it now virtually through Zoom. The other big adjustment has been obviously with the courts. Right now, the hearings for these children are being done one of two ways, either through Microsoft Teams virtually or telephonically. And so that's another huge change, that absence of interaction that would occur before, during, and after a hearing. You know, the other thing that we've had to adjust is our contact with our children. We never want to put either a child at risk or one of our volunteer advocates at risk. So, but again, we rely so much on that one-to-one connection with the child and with the advocate that that's been impacted, quite honestly, with COVID, because we want to make sure that no one is placed in a compromised position. And then lastly, it's impacted us and fundraising-wise. We've had to cancel our signature fundraising event, our Casablanca Gala, which is held in September. 400 people attend at the hangar in the 44th Airport, and obviously that was not going to happen this year, and you know that raised for us in excess of $100,000. So that was a significant blow to us financially, because we don't receive any tax dollars at the county, state, or federal level. We rely on grants through foundations and fundraising events like the Casablanca Gala. So we just completed our NEPA Sings event. I think that's when we last spoke, perhaps, Paula.
It was.
Wrapping up for NEPA Sings, but we did that virtually, and that was well received, and that occurred in August. So we were happy to do that event, even though we're disappointed we could not do Casablanca. So we, like everyone else, we are trying to find ways to navigate through COVID and re-pivot and how we can do our things, whether it's from a fundraising perspective, training our advocates, and supervising our current advocates in the way the court system has changed. As adults, we still struggle with COVID because of the uncertainty that it's created in our lives, the stress it's placed on relationships, the uncertainty of when it's going to end. You know, I couldn't help but think how this situation of COVID parallels the unfortunate situation of children in foster care who have been removed from their homes. So they're experiencing instability, you know, impermanence, change, all not knowing when they are going to experience, whether it's a return home or not, and when. And so for them, it's almost like living with co-emotional stressful standpoint. And so it just speaks to the need, I believe, of the importance of having that one adult in their life, our volunteer advocates, who can assist them, cope, help them cope with the stress and the difficulty and the trauma of what they've experienced from an abuse and neglect level, as well as a foster care placement.
So it must be very difficult when you talk about, you mentioned in the very beginning about the fact that the advocate class unfortunately had to be postponed. What do you teach in these types of classes?
Again, we follow a curriculum designed by the National CASA organization in Seattle, Washington. So we'll cover it over the course of 8 weeks, and each class is 3 hours. And there's also pre-work, if you will, with each particular subject. But they'll talk about things like the role of CASA, the child welfare system, cultural competence, trauma, mental health, social determinants of health, domestic violence, educational advocacy, poverty, and neglect. So it touches upon those core subjects that an advocate can expect to encounter through his or her advocacy. But ultimately, the advocate really becomes an advocate once he or she has taken a case and what it's, that experience is like to begin that process of advocacy, both in your relationship with the child through the court system. In Pennsylvania, statewide, the average reentry rate of children reentering foster care after they've been returned home is 20-22%, if you will. It's about 2,200 children. Foster care can be extremely, extremely traumatic for the reasons that we've discussed. But to think about reentering foster care after you've been returned home, you know, that level of trauma. So I think that's an extremely impactful program statewide. And so if there is anyone listening who has an interest in becoming an advocate, I would encourage them to, you know, to visit our website at luzerncasa.org or to call our office at 570-855-2247. We'll be doing another training class in the spring, and we hope that we can increase our number of volunteer advocates so that we can serve more children.
Don't go away. There's more Special Edition to come. Welcome back to Special Edition. Pandemic or not, the Friends of the Poor aren't letting down their friends for Thanksgiving.
The big dinner at the Cultural Center, you know, I mean, thousands and thousands of people and the food giveaway. How do you do that in a pandemic?
So we really thought about that because this will be the 44th year for the dinner, and it's a staple in the community, and a lot of people depend on it. So we didn't want to just let it go, you know, with all that 2020 has thrown at us. So for the dinner, we're still going to meet at the Cultural Center with our volunteers, and we're going to pack the hot meal into takeout containers and then distribute it on the corner of North Washington and Vine as people can drive by. And then for those adults and elderly that, you know, are wheelchair bound or have mobility issues that we typically would bus in, we're going to partner with the Lackawanna County Area Agency on Aging and Meals on Wheels to have meals delivered to them.
Do you have any idea how many meals you're talking about?
3,000 still.
3,000. Now, the first thing I think of when I hear you saying that is you might need a few volunteers too, right? How do people help?
We definitely need volunteers, but we're asking everybody who'd like to volunteer to either call or email us ahead of time because we still have to make sure we have enough space to spread out and maintain social distancing so everyone can be safe. So just give us a call at our office or send us a quick email and let us know what your plans are.
Will there be the family-to-family food distribution, the Thanksgiving food?
Absolutely. That'll be the next day, Wednesday, November 25th. We're going to go from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., but instead of being at the Cultural Center this year, we'll be at Scranton High School so we can do a drive-by as we've been doing for the COVID giveaways where we just put the groceries in people's trunks.
Okay. Final question. If people want to make a donation, a cash, a money donation to you guys, how do they do that? And again, well, who do they call or how do they connect with you guys to be a volunteer?
So we're asking for monetary donations this year instead of in-kind donations. With the takeout dinner and the family-to-family, we need a lot of PPE. We need a lot of takeout containers and things that are unique that we had to order ahead of time. So monetary donations can be sent to Friends of the Poor at 2300 Adams Ave, Scranton, PA, 18509. Or you can donate on our website, FOTP-IHM.org. And both of those are great ways to get in touch with us, to email us or call us at 570-340-6086 to volunteer.
Anything we can do at any point to help, you give us a call, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And we want you to stay healthy. Executive Deputy Secretary, Pennsylvania Department of Health, Sandra Botang says, get your flu shot.
This flu season leaves a lot of unknowns. One thing we do know is that the flu vaccine works and protects you from becoming sick. Flu vaccines are already available for the 2020-2021 flu season, which officially started September 27th. Getting a flu vaccine is the best way to protect yourself from the flu, and it is safe to go to your doctor's office, pharmacy, local walk-in clinic, or grocery store to get your flu vaccine. Getting the flu vaccine will not only help you, but it will and protect you from getting severely ill, but it will also protect your family, your friends, your coworkers, and your community. Because of the symptoms of flu and COVID-19 are similar, it may be hard to tell the difference between them based on the symptoms alone. And testing may be needed to confirm the diagnosis. And that brings us back to how important it is to get the flu vaccine this year. It will even help frontline healthcare workers who will be caring for people sick with respiratory illnesses this fall and winter.
You can always log on to the Pennsylvania Department of Health website or call 1-877-PA-HEALTH for more information. Now don't go away. Auditor General Eugene DePasquale will introduce us to Esther Bush on Special Edition. Welcome back to Special Edition. How have people's lives throughout the Commonwealth been affected by COVID-19? Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale has been interviewing many to find out today. Esther Bush, President of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon, everyone. Eugene DePasquale here, Pennsylvania Auditor General, and continuing our discussions of the impact of COVID on whether it be Pennsylvania, as even some of these other talks have been across the country. And I'm honored to have the legend, Esther Bush, who is here. She is with the Urban League of Pittsburgh, and she is the definition of a national leader, a Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania treasure. And we're going to talk about the impacts of COVID health-wise and economic-wise to the people of color. We may talk specifically in Pennsylvania, but certainly I'm sure she knows some national statistics as well. But before we go into that, Esther, honor to have you. Really appreciate the time, and feel free if you could just give people a little bit of a quick intro of yourself, and then we'll get rolling right into the topic.
Sure. Thank you so much. It is indeed my pleasure to be a guest today. The topic that you want to address is so critically important. I am pleased to have been with the Urban League movement now for 4 decades and here in Pittsburgh for 25 years. And just to remind your audience, the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, as is the mission of the other 90 affiliates, is to assist African Americans to achieve economic self-reliance, parity, power, and civil rights. So the bottom line is, we believe in equity as we want for all Americans. And we work to do that every day. And I want to thank you for your support over the years for having a clear understanding of that. And I mean that sincerely.
Hey, and I know the last time we talked, and certainly my role as Auditor General, one of the primary functions is education and making sure that education outcomes, again, you're never going to get everyone equal, nor should we, right? There's always going to be people with different talents, but children especially need to have equal opportunity. And one thing COVID, and maybe talk a little bit about what you're seeing across in the Pittsburgh region, Pennsylvania, across the country, but lower income children clearly are have an even greater impact because of COVID, even if no one in their family got it, because if you're not going to school every day, if you don't have the great internet technology in your home, the access to so many of the tools that maybe wealthier kids in suburban areas or even wealthier sections of urban America have, it's created another layer of disparity in our education system. Can you talk a little bit about that, what you're seeing from the Urban League perspective on this?
Sure, and thank you so much for beginning with the basics, our children. And here in the city of Pittsburgh, we have issues, as I'm sure low-income communities have throughout the state and the country. First of all, when we think about school, of course we think about education. So education is one slice, but missing the meals is another piece, and babysitting is another piece. So there's a snowballing impact when we talk about kids not going to school. But focusing on the academic part, when schools say, okay, we're going to school, in school for 2 days a week, and we're going to use the internet technology for the other 3 days, let us look at how many of our children do not have access. The homes do not have Wi-Fi. Maybe me and my two sisters are being raised by my grandmother, who knows nothing about technology, much less to help me on the computer. And so it really is a snowballing impact. So when we talk about school during the coronavirus era, we really want to dot I's and cross T's about the holistic impact. And just to layer that down some, I'm concerned about the kids' academic growth or lack thereof. I'm concerned about them not having access to Wi-Fi or maybe not having technology in their house at all. I'm concerned about who's in the house to assist them in learning. I'm concerned about, let's say it's a single female head of household whose job has let her work from home, but I can't work from home and keep an eye on a three-year-old and help a seven-year-old. Right. We have to be very realistic. I'm very concerned about the lack of meals that the school typically has provided, meaning the breakfast and lunch programs.
And Esther, if I could interrupt for that, I just want to let the audience know, and this is an uncomfortable conversation for many of us, but the reality is there is a very large chunk of children in the United States, locally here in Pennsylvania and across the United States, that their primary way of getting good meals is at school.
That's
so
right.
And nobody is happy about that. It's not the school's fault. But when they're not in school, they're not getting, many kids, good quality food. And you can even say whether cafeteria food's good or bad. I'm not here to make fun of that. I'm just talking about, like, for many kids, that's their time to get quality meals. And I'm sure that's the case in the greater Pittsburgh area. It certainly holds true across the United States.
Exactly. And I think your point is one that, no matter how you view the pandemic, I want everybody to not look at just the surface impact, but please continue to go down and see how this snowballs and how it is against especially low-income individuals, people in urban areas, people of color, et cetera. The impact is quite devastating.
Now, also another issue that we need to talk about, and it is a factor with housing, but in York, where I live, 10% of our students are functionally homeless. It doesn't mean they're sleeping under a bridge, and I don't mean that to make fun of anyone that sleeps under a bridge. We all know there's people that have mental health challenges, and there's a whole host of other issues that go with that. But 10% of our children are functionally homeless in York City. My sense is, just talking to education leaders across the state and across the country, that that is relatively similar statistically in urban areas, again, across the state and across the country. Walk us through, again, some of the challenge you have when a child is functionally homeless, meaning they're staying with friends, staying with maybe an aunt, something like that, what that can do to their daily routine. When we all know being, especially I'm thinking about being a teenager now where my daughter's a senior in high school, it's tough enough to be a teenager. When you're in an upper middle income home and, you know, you're going to a, you know, good suburban public school, you'll check all those boxes. It still can be a challenge to be a teenager. Now walk you through when that's like when you're functionally homeless.
And I am very proud that the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, largest direct social service program, deals with housing. And so we have contracts to assist individuals, rental, mortgage, utilities. And so to your point, those individuals that come in, they are saying, I'm couch surfing right now. I have two children. It's me. I'm living with my cousin. I have two more weeks to live there. Can you help me? Right. And so it obviously impacts that mother and those two children, but it also impacts the relatives that she's living with. And so again, the snowballing impact of the lack of independence, of the lack of the ability to find a job and come home back and forth, mm-hmm. to move from A to B, it is challenging to say the least. And the list goes on in terms of the negative impacts that it has on us. And so we need support. Those families need support.
And final thing I want to bring up to you before we turn it over to questions, because as I jokingly say, our faceless moderator Gary out there who's got some questions for you. The health disparities are also another huge issue. So you got food, you've got housing, and then you throw in the health disparities. We know when you are living in condensed urban areas, you know, the likelihood of getting this virus are significantly increased just because you're closer to people. So when you're in, you know, whether it's an apartment building or something, you know, when you're out in an area where you're more spread out, you know, it doesn't mean you can't get it. We obviously know that, but the likelihood is decreased. So many of our kids and so many of our people that live in urban America, particularly, you know, in Pennsylvania, the urban areas, it's just condenser. And that, by the way, there's some parts you may like about that, some parts you may not, but that increases the health disparity because more people are likely to contract it. Then you throw into the African-American community more likely to not have health insurance, which thus limits access to health facilities. That has added another burden during this virus. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And when we look at history, in terms of the systemic issues that have had negative impacts on our healthcare, and the fact that a lot of these individuals that you're referencing are our essential workers. And those essential workers have been laid off. Insurance didn't come with their job in the beginning. The fact that they do not have the opportunity to go and get the kind of possibly free supportive help that they would have gotten if they were allowed to go to a hospital or allowed to receive medical attention from the social services. So it is just so much. Even doctor's offices have said, don't come in, we will see you via technology, but I don't have a computer. How do I get the help that I need? Right. And so every single aspect of our quality of life relevant to healthcare has been impacted by this pandemic. And that's why we say that African Americans right now, the National Urban League has said, we are fighting two major issues, racism and the pandemic, and all of it is measurable, and all of us can help change that.
Now, thank you for that, Esther. Now we're going to turn it over to Gary, who is, again, he does have a face. You just can't see it on the Zoom call. Gary, welcome back into the discussion, and what question do you have for Esther and myself out there?
Thanks, General. As I like to say, I have a face made for radio. Esther, it's so nice to speak with you today.
A pleasure. Staying
on the topic of disparities, a lot of the disparities that have been brought to light by the pandemic have actually existed for years, for generations. What can be done at the state level to finally help resolve them once and for all?
You know, at the state level, I would ask that everything that the state offers, that it be reevaluated. I'm talking about support for families, for children, employment opportunities, et cetera. It has to be evaluated in terms of, is this something that is built on equity so that all Pittsburghers, all Pennsylvanians have equal access? Is it a certain twist or modification that needs to be made so that urban dwellers have more of an opportunity? Is this something that has been set up? When you look at the criteria, well, African Americans really don't fit this general criteria. So how can we tweak it? Everything today needs to be re-reviewed with an equity lens. We all know there is a great lack of equality in this country. The have and the have-nots is how this country was built. And so forget yesterday. Let's build on whatever progress we made yesterday for today. Now, I can get very specific on a couple hundred issues, but okay. In general, please measure everything from an equity perspective.
Great insights. Thank you. As we know, Black-owned businesses are often keystones of their community and important from an employment standpoint. Do you feel that the first round of federal stimulus aid did enough to help minority-owned businesses? And if there's another round, how can that be improved?
Well, the first answer is easy. No, it did not do enough because it didn't do what I just explained, and that is meeting everybody from an equity issue. I'm extremely proud to say that Mark Morial, the president of the National Urban League, has been meeting with the folks in DC, not only to raise that issue, but have written recommendations for how it can be addressed. But let me tell you what else we can do right here in Pennsylvania. I am very pleased to see that there are certain contracts from the county, from the state, from the city that says X percentage of your contract should be minority owned. And it should be a certified minority owned business.
Right.
But when we say certified, how much does that cost? What is it that I have to do to be certified? Maybe I cannot afford it. And so maybe during this period of time, we could really embrace minority-owned businesses to say, here's what we're going to do to assist you from a completing the paperwork perspective, from paying to assist you to become certified. And let me share just a couple stories that have come up for me. I know an extremely qualified businessman that he was a recent startup. He could not get the support he needed here, not only in Pittsburgh and the state of Pennsylvania, but around the United States. He had just made very good contact in China, months into progress, smiling. COVID-19 came in, that relationship was resolved. But let me give you another one. The Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, we've been doing a lot of work really trying to fill some voids. And one of the businesses, minority owned, that we approached to buy some essential products from was so very pleased that we contacted them because their business was going down because they used to be a significant supplier to one of the universities. But now, of course, that university has said, we don't need quite as much toilet tissue, quite as many paper towels, et cetera, because the students aren't here. So let us look at the snowballing impact of all of these businesses.
Good points. Thank you. Finally, from me, you know, we've talked a lot about the hardships that the pandemic has caused. Tell me about what you've seen in Pittsburgh that gives you cause to be hopeful.
I have to smile because I first have to think about my own staff and how my staff are essential workers. My staff is assisting. Our housing program is my largest department. They've been coming in throughout this pandemic to assist with individuals that needed help with rent, mortgage, utilities, and how they have flipped their entire intake process to make sure they're meeting the needs of the client. That's from the intake process to the referrals out, et cetera. Everything has been changed. And when we look at the essential workers, not just here at the Urban League, but those essential workers are really individuals that make our economy move. I'm talking now about maintenance workers, fast foods, you name it, the list goes on and on. People that we typically take for granted with what they do. But look at where we are as a society without them. And they're called essential workers for a reason. Can we treat them as such? And can we fill the voids of what our systems have really denied them historically?
We owe them much more than our thanks. Ms. Bush, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. General, I'll hand it back to you.
Great. Esther, thank you so much. I know how incredibly busy you are, but thank you for spending some time with us to share, I don't mean even stories, but really what's happening on the ground to the African-American community in Pittsburgh. And I am sure it is very similar to our urban areas across the country. And as we again talked about before went on the air, you know, one thing COVID has taught us or retaught us is that we're all in this together. So the problems for one community impact our entire community. These things are not contained. If there's a problem in one segment of our society, you know, it's obviously important we address it anyway, but certainly during COVID, we now know that it impacts any of us, every one of us. So,
and it's
Esther, thank
everybody's
you for
responsibility. It is not point the finger, why didn't you do right. something? It is each citizen's responsibility to help us improve all Pennsylvanians' quality of life.
That's absolutely right. Well, again, Esther, thank you so much for your time. I don't know if you have anything to say in closing before we head off, but thank you for your time. Anything you want to add before we close it out?
I think what I just said is we need to own where we are. We need to do a great self-assessment. We need to get out and vote. Please, everybody vote and be an educated voter. And we need to complete the census. And so the millions of dollars that come to each community, we can get everything that we deserve. Vote, complete your census, we'll be a better state.
Way to end it, Esther. Thank you so much. And to everyone else out there, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your feedback. So everyone out there, just remember, be smart, be safe. We're all in this together. Thank you and have a great rest of the day.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories, a production of Intercom Communications.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.